a major league team in a major league city. The new crew.
This is to us. This is to Columbus. This is what this is all about. Unity, Columbus, history, the future, the new era, the new crew. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Live to Awesome Town, Ohio, you are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of news and information for your Awesome Town crew.
And good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, another edition of the Massive Report. Welcome to it. We're brought to you by Land Grant Brewing and live at Hendox. My name is Matt Goschert, joined this week by Justin Bell, Morgan Hughes, Alex Stanek, and Greg Benson. A lot of stuff to talk to, so talk about, and I guess to talk to. So we're going to get right to it. The crew defeat the New York Red Bulls by a score of 2-1 on the 4th of July. The United States are Women's World Cup champions, and that's pretty darn awesome. We're going to start with the crew and then go into the big World Cup celebratory actions a little bit later. Guys, pretty good game by the crew. I'll take it. 2-1 win. Morgan's shaking his head like he was super upset that I just said that.
No.
So give me your thoughts on Saturday's game.
What, define the most MLS thing that could happen. Entering Saturday, we were out of playoff contention. We were sitting in sixth place in the Eastern Conference.
So we were still in playoff contention because the most MLS thing is you change the playoff rules every year and allow six teams in this year.
And at the end of the night, we're in second place in the East, contending for the top spot. Like, if the playoffs would have started that morning, we would not be in them. If they would have started that night, we would have had a first-round bye. I mean, wow. The only thing I take away from that game, other than Cedric Mabwadi's just horrid-looking pleather Phillies hat, which was just a goddamn embarrassment. Rodrigo Castro should just feel terrible about himself for allowing that to happen. The thing I take away from that is Ethan Finley is God. Back to you, Matt.
Alex, give me your thoughts on Saturday's match.
It was a great game. I thought we played really well. And you can't argue with the result. I mean, a lot of things fell into the path of the crew that I think help us, not just the game, but I mean, looking at the standings, teams that needed to lose lost. And so like Morgan said, we shot up the table. And yeah, we're starting to see from Ethan Finley what I think a lot of people were hoping to see earlier in the season. He's still having a great season, but I mean, he grabbed that game and dominated. And that's good because we were really reliant on Kai Kamara earlier in the season, but now we're starting to get the midfielders into it, and you know, hopefully this bodes well for the crew going further into the year.
Well, and Kamara gets a primary assist on both the goals as well. Yeah. So, I mean, that's...
And Steve Clark getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, I noticed that. I kind of thought that was a typo for a second, but yes, no, Steve Clark with the second assist on the first Ethan Finley goal. That's pretty crazy. Greg, your thoughts on the match?
Well, I like this for two reasons. I like it because of the fact that Ethan Finley and Kai Kamara are working well together. It doesn't matter who puts the ball in the net. Mm-hmm. They're helping each other out. And that's, that works for me on a couple levels. Also, it frees up Higuain to, on the second goal, mainly, it was his ball to find Kamara that found Finley, which was huge. The other thing about this is this reminds me a lot of the game last Wednesday against the New England Revolution, which we didn't talk about on last week's show.
Thank you.
And I mentioned that a couple of times during last week's show, and I'll doubtless mention it again because I'm not letting that one go. But just the fact that we gave up the early goal against New England, like 30-something seconds in, and then immediate response.
Yeah.
And it was the same with this. It wasn't the immediate result, but they went into the locker room having just tied it up right before halftime. There was a lot of heart that was shown after the goal. Even last year, you wonder if this team, after giving up a goal so early in the game, would have gone kind of into their shell a little bit and tried to make something happen that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
They took the fight right back to the Red Bulls, who were pretty darn hot coming into this game.
Yeah.
And took it right out of them. So I love the fight. I think they deserved it.
Justin, Ethan Finley, are you ready to subscribe to or join the Church of Finley as Morgan seems to be?
I'm not ready to join the Church of Finley.
Okay.
I think he's gotten better in terms of, like, he and Kamara and Egoyan are more on the same page. Like, he's not a step behind as he was. He's not a half step behind. I think they're, like I said, more on the same page. I thought Kai Kamara's assist, his first assist, was brilliant. The last time I saw something like that was Thierry Henry when he played for us, where he just put enough of a touch on the ball with his head on a back flick to speed the ball up, put it right where Finley was going to be, and that was tremendous. I thought Justin Merrim had a tremendous game, and he didn't get on the score sheet, and he should have. I thought the first goal should have been his volley. I mean, that was an incredible hit that he had. And so he played a game that I think is going to be overlooked because the guy on the other side of the field scored two goals. There's a couple things, though, about this game that I think people have to kind of step back a little bit. After about 15 minutes, I think New York looked exhausted. Like, they weren't Sasha Kljestan was nowhere in that entire game.
Yeah.
The other issue that I noticed was we had two handballs in the box, and they were pretty blatant. The second one in particular was obvious, and that should have been I don't know if it should have been a red card. It should have been a yellow card. It should have been a PK.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. Those things balance themselves out, I guess, over the course of a year. But, I mean, that was something that the AR should have called. He was looking right at it.
Yeah. It's New York had... There were a couple of dicey moments with New York in the box as well. It seemed that there were a lot of especially calls in the box in this game that were overlooked or just not called correctly.
And those were more, like, there's a lot of judgment calls.
Yeah.
Like, I think when a player has his arm, like, out to the side like Francis did.
Yeah.
And blocks a shot.
Insane.
I think that's
totally legal.
That's pretty much, you got to see that. I mean, that's as obvious as Kaká stomping on a guy. That's how obvious that was. Waiting.
Where's the outrage, Alex?
Where's the outrage, Alex?
I still love Kaká. I'm sorry.
Because he stomps people?
Kaká! No,
does he stomp your heart?
He stomped my heart when he went to Real Madrid, but then he put it back together when he came back.
Oh, my God. Who cares?
During Tifo Sweat, actually, is when that happened. I was harassing Justin. He was trying to get work done, and I was like, Justin, he's back. He's back. And he was like, okay, Alex.
Yeah.
We do have to mention that there was yet another early goal.
Yeah.
Again. I mean, if you watch that goal... just incredible finish from a really difficult angle.
Yeah.
Pogatetz pushed him into a really, really tough spot.
Yeah.
And he still finished. So, I mean, you know, on one side you're like, well, there we go again. And on another side you're like, that was pretty difficult. Good on you, man.
Yeah, this wasn't anything like the first goal that we gave up against New England, you know, where, you know, that game, that's a case of Parkhurst not closing down his man.
Mm-hmm.
This time it wasn't really a defensive lapse. It was... just a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get those go against you from time to time.
You should also mention Will Trapp coming back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's something that is a definite positive, and it's something that will hopefully help us as we continue to move on.
The ovation for Trapp totally and completely made no one notice that Jesse Marsh got thrown out of the game.
Yeah. Seriously, I still don't know what happened with that.
He was probably upset about the multiple handballs that the referees missed in the box. Yeah, I don't know. Who could be sure, Matt?
Well, you know.
He was probably just really excited about the coming out party of Kristen Steinerson. That's really what, you know. Most you know, global media figures were talking about that on Sunday morning, so you can only assume Jesse Marsh was thinking about that Saturday night.
I just thought he was really excited about the great tasting alcoholic beverages at Land Grant Brewing.
Definitely a possibility, Matt.
Yeah. True story.
One of the moments I liked, which, you know, look, this is where we don't get calls. Mm-hmm. Is when Felipe ran into Higuain's hand.
Oh my God!
And then went flat on his back like he'd been punched in the face.
Yeah,
I mean, that deserves a suspension.
I hope they review that.
That seriously deserves a suspension. Yeah, because that's what you're trying to do is you're actively trying to get the other team's best player thrown out of the game for punching you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm okay with that during the run of play, right? Like where you draw a foul, you draw a penalty on another team's best player. Mm-hmm. In something like this, it's just, come on, that's poor sportsmanship. That's not gamesmanship, that's poor sportsmanship.
The best part of that was that it was on the scoreboard. Like, they were showing Higuain, the whole stadium watched Felipe just run himself very gently into the back of Higuain's hand and then collapse.
So we touched on this earlier, one win, and we go from sixth place in the East to second place in the East. But
as is tradition.
I do have to point out that we have within 1 point of each other, the top six other than the number two through number six in the Eastern Conference are all 1 point away from each other. Columbus, Orlando, and New England all on 24 points. Toronto and New York on 23 points. And then we have the New York City Yankees at 20, and Philly at 19.
The almost with Pirlo, New York City Yankee, minor league Manchester.
Can you guys picture how funny it's going to be watching the speed difference between Andrea Pirlo and Cedric Mobwati when that time comes? It's going to seem bizarre. Pirlo is old. He's still good, but that midfield. New York City with Mix Discarud, Frank Lampard, and Andrea Pirlo is going to be so slow. It's going to be weird.
It's really funny.
Walker Club.
MLS 1.0 level.
Well, there's a reason Jason Christ didn't want him. Like, they wanted a young DP to build around, and City Football Group basically forced them to buy this guy. It's weird.
It's... we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the transfers, and we're going to get into talking about the new amazing core player rule.
Well, looking at the schedule, at the standings, we are 11 points behind DC United.
Insane.
We're also in it. Like, I think we would be in eighth if we were in the West. So, was saying, it's the most MLS thing of MLS.
Yeah, it really is.
Justin, I have to correct you there. Seventh.
Oh, we'd be in seventh. We'd be fighting for that seventh.
How many games is
whatever card spotted?
How many games do we have in hand on DC though? Three.
Three I think it is. Yeah.
So we'll get 2 points from those max. We're right back in this thing.
Cedric.
Toronto has two games in hand on us though, and Red Bull has one game in hand on us, and they're both in the fourth or fifth and sixth place spots respectively.
We are 6-6-6.
Hell yes.
Hell of a season.
And Tony Galifo is super excited.
So is Orlando.
About that.
How did nobody laugh at Greg's joke? That was hilarious. That's the funniest thing he said in like 2 years.
Damn. Now that was the funniest thing you said.
Wow.
This is like, this is like Inception comedy.
I have no response. This is all so hilarious.
Morgan is speechless.
All I know is that what you just said seemed like it took 20 years.
Yeah. Wait, is that the mushrooms we ate?
We're at levels right now. Levels.
Oh my God. I've been falling backwards in this chair for like an hour. No, wait, that's Toronto FC.
Oh my God.
And it's 8 years.
This is good stuff.
All right, we're going to go to break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk some women's
If you die in, on the show, you die in real life.
That's true.
Goodbye, everybody.
Broadcasting from what we think is Hendox, but it could just be a cloud. Some of this, my friends, is the Massive Report.
This edition of the Master of War podcast is brought to you, as always, by Land Grant Brewing Company. Land Grant Brewing Company is a local business located down in Franklinton and is run by a wonderful team of humans who come together every day to produce delicious, intoxicating alcohol, which is then served to you, the paying customer, in medium-sized glass containers, which they fill to the brim. Hooray! But Morgan, you say? I don't like medium-sized glass containers, which are filled to the brim with delicious, intoxicating alcohol from Land Grant Brewing Company, because I am from Montreal, I don't speak English, and I have no idea what you are saying. Well, sacre bleu, you unidentified, flappy-headed Montreal soccer supporter. Delicious, intoxicating alcohol is without question the one true global language, and you'd be doing yourselves a great disservice if you didn't put down the baguette and pick up a frosty mug of liquid freedom from Land Grant Brewing Company. So while all you French-speaking hockey players with your first initials on the front of your t-shirts and your bell-shaped craniums are busy fist-pumping with Dilly Duca, the rest of you cool cats can head on down to Land Grant Brewing Company to grab a cold one and enjoy America. And don't forget to tell them your buddies, pals, and guys over at the Master Report Podcast sent ya.
And we are back. It is segment two of the Massive Reports, live at Hendox. Hey, we want to say thank you to A Cake for Leroy. They came by again and gave us more delicious baked goods.
Hooray.
Thank you. They were good.
Seriously, they were amazing.
Yeah, they were really good. Morgan, you're still working on your oatmeal cream pie.
I had to do the Land Grant spot, Matt, you ungrateful bastard.
I know.
It's because oatmeal and cream, as Morgan was saying, is like the perfect thing to be eating during recording.
Yeah.
Speaking into a microphone.
Yeah.
Doing anything.
It was fantastic.
The human torch was denied the backbone.
Every time a business gives us lots of money to make bullshit, I like to shove a bunch of crap in the middle of my teeth and then talk about them.
Speaking of which, if you want to sponsor the show, hit me up.
Yeah, sure.
Can they pay us in cookies? Can we do that?
Yeah, I don't care. We're not subject to FCC rules.
That's fine by me.
They can
Those
pay us
chocolate chip cookies were unbelievable.
Cookies.
So good.
Yeah.
I think I ate half of them.
You know what else is great? Soccer. Welcome to segment two, everyone.
Yeah. And the Women's World Cup ended. Australia didn't win.
Yeah.
The U.S.
Didn't expect to, by the way. So
the U.S. did win.
They did.
So there's that. By just putting an immense beat down on Japan. Four goals in, what was it?
16 minutes.
Yeah, that was insane. I get a phone call or a text from Justin, and he's like, yeah, I was just going to jump in the shower real quick before I came out. And four goals later, he got done with his shower. So
magic showers.
No, because he wasn't at the bar. It doesn't count. Yeah, he wasn't at the place it was happening
magic
or we
showers.
Were viewing there. Magic showers.
What's that based on? I know I've heard something about that somewhere.
Yeah. I think it's you're thinking of the truck stop sex you had the other night.
No, I could have sworn I was thinking of something else.
Is what I think about. So
Morgan?
Hell of a tournament by the U.S.
I know what you're talking about.
give me your reactions though. Alex, I'm gonna start with you.
Unbelievable day. That might have been the happiest I've ever been because of a sporting event in my entire life. I don't know what it was about that game, but having watched a lot of those players kind of come up through and kind of watch them grow from, you know, when Abby debuted, I mean, she was kind of decent, but to see her career progress all the way to this point and to see all those players kind of go out like that, unbelievable. To win the World Cup is a huge thing, and to win it in that way against Japan, it was absolutely incredible. We played a great game from the first minute to the last. Carly Lloyd with, in my opinion, the best World Cup final performance in recent history. I can't think of anybody who's played a better game than she did. And we have so much young talent as well that, you know, the future is just unbelievable. It was an amazing day.
Do you think that they after the 5-2 win that they were just thinking to themselves that all the people that were like, where are the goals from the U.S. national team in this tournament? And they were just like, screw you guys.
Mm-hmm. It screwed up a whole bunch of narratives.
Yeah.
It really
yeah.
did. Like, complete domination. You could tell all the writers were like, oh, but I already had the story written. I'm just going to put in the box score. It's going to be perfect. I hate America.
Morgan,
fire Klinsman.
Morgan's absolutely right, though. I mean, this was on a number of different facets. This was a game that I don't think anybody expected to go the way that it did. I mean, the U.S.'s defense had been their strength throughout the entire World Cup, and it suddenly just goes away. I mean, to be fair, Japan's went away worse, but and they'd been a very technical team, too, throughout the whole tournament. They hadn't been scored on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just this game was like both teams had been saving up whatever we just saw.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to process it. Like... Where did all this come from? This we don't need no stinking defense. and the four goal explosion again. It's the where did the offense come from and where did the domination come from? I mean, we saw the U.S. progressively get better over the tournament, but I don't think anybody was expecting that.
Do you think like I'm just you know in watching the game, Justin? You watched most of the second half with us at the bar. But
clean, by the way.
Clean. No, you smelled amazing. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Was that the best performance you've seen the women's team put on?
Yeah, they were excellent. I thought this was coming though.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were on their way to this. I think Morgan was absolutely right. Look, there is this quality in the American soccer Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Commentariat is the word I usually use.
That's a word.
They have narratives, and they want those narratives to come true. Last night, I saw a tweet that as I was going to bed, I had to delete several responses that I just kind of wanted to throw at this particular person. But it was basically saying that, you know, finally Jill Ellis listened to what we were all saying. It's like, okay, yeah, that makes complete sense, you moron. Like, this is what people do. Like, they say that we have, that for some reason, in these people's minds, the national team coaches, professional coaches, no matter at what level, consult Twitter before they make major moves in quadrennial soccer tournaments that the entire world's watching. That's how this works, right, guys? You're absolutely right. You're the geniuses.
To be fair, Cameroon's coach that they just hired, CoachBot 7000, that's how it does.
That's where we're going. Someday
it just aggregates Twitter, and then that's how it coaches.
I can't help but wonder how decisions were ever made in international soccer tournaments before Twitter became a thing.
Darts!
Yeah, I do think it's impressive, though, to watch kind of the way that they've kind of figured out how to win. Because in the early part of the tournament, this did not look like a team that was going to win the World Cup. Through the group stage, they looked good, but they didn't look like they were going to beat a Germany or even maybe beat, like, a China. And what they showed in that China game and what they continued to show was that, you know, they were this unified group of people. And as soon as Ellis kind of figured out where the pieces all fit, there was nothing that was going to stop him in that game, and you saw Carly Lloyd just come out and just explode. And I mean, what can you do if you're the Japanese team? I mean, if you're the coach of Japan, what do you say to those players? I mean, he threw Sawa on what 30th minute?
Yeah,
because they had no answers to what we were doing.
They had nothing they could do.
It's worth noting Japan made two non-injury substitutes in the first half.
Yeah.
That's unheard of.
Because you might as well try. They had nothing that could stop the United States. And it was unbelievable. If you were writing a story, like a Hollywood movie about this thing, maybe the only thing you would change is you would have Abby Wambach scoring in like the 90th minute.
You know they already are, right?
I'm sure they probably
are. They have to be.
See, but you got all of like the old players on. Like, I loved the last two subs from Ellis. I mean, bringing on Wambach and letting her have her kind of swan song, and then bringing on Rampone. And having like the armband move around, I just thought it was so perfect, and it was a great way to kind of bookend that generation of women's soccer players, and that the next generation that's coming is going to be even better.
Got to give it up to the American Outlaws. They, what What would we be without them? And I mean as a country. What would we be without them? They have unified. They have strengthened. They have unified and strengthened again. They've done it multiple times. Do you have any idea how unified we are and how strong we are?
I was just super happy that they realized, like, 4 or 5 days ago we had a women's team.
It's remarkable, isn't it? That they got that banner up there, up to Canada, which is really far away. They got it up there in time to march into the stadium with all those cameras. It was, I mean, do you have any idea how unified and strong we are right now, man? We're pretty strong. Back to you.
Well, I kind of want to disagree with what was said earlier. I think this team, and the way that this team has progressed over the course of a month, actually fits with how teams do that perform well in a World Cup or in a prolonged tournament, including, say, like Argentina during the Men's World Cup last year. Like, there's always these people who are always going to question results, no matter what. And unless you're blowing teams out 5-0, 8-0 during the course of a tournament, you're going to be criticized. Mm-hmm. I think this is, and it almost reflects a little bit on how I think the Columbus Crew season is going, in a way. And that is that defense is usually solid at the beginning because it's easy to play defense. Defense comes together earlier in the season or earlier in a tournament. And then offense develops because it's one of the things that's so difficult to do is finish in the final third. I mean, it's everything else is easier to pick up, but that final third finishing is so, so difficult because everything has to be right. All the players are compacted into that small zone, and you have to have everything right to score a goal.
Yeah.
What we saw last night, those first two goals were right in front of goal. And those are that's a team that has figured it, like, where the rest of your teammates are going to be. It made sense. They were filling in spots. They were getting to where they needed to be to score. You notice that Sydney LaRue did not play.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't start. Wasn't a part of that. And part of the reason, I think, for that is that she's not good. She's not great in those small spaces, right? I mean, like, there are players who are better than her in those small spaces. Abby Wambach, I'd say, is kind of the same way a little bit. Alex Morgan, I mean, that's who I meant. Alex Morgan's kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have midfielders scoring goals, then you know that something's going right.
Yeah.
And Carly Lloyd, God bless her, may her name be praised forever and ever. That's why it took her to the point where it took her that long to get to the point where they can all work as a team and score those goals. Those are team goals, as far as I'm concerned, except for the one where she hit from 54 yards out.
Mm-hmm. Which
that
was
all her. All amazing.
And good teams have a tendency to figure out ways to win different types of games.
Right.
1-0, 5-2, mm-hmm. and everything in between. And just because you're winning a couple 1-0 games, it doesn't mean it's time to set the house on fire.
And also, also too, like, the fact that the defense was so good, I mean, once you get that settled...
Right. There's a whole part of the side of the ball that is totally and completely ignored when you're setting the house on fire.
Absolutely. Julie Johnson, she had a really poor play, during... Which match was that? Was that the semifinal against Germany, right?
Mm-hmm. She had an own goal yesterday.
She had an own goal last night.
I mean, she wanted
to get on the score sheet.
But she had a really terrific tournament,
yeah.
Except for those two instances. And you saw, like, what happened when she gave up that PK. They rallied around her, right? And I think part of that's, honest to God, I think part of that's Hope Solo.
Mm-hmm.
I think they know that she's back there. They know that she's really terrific. And it gives them a little bit of confidence. I was listening to a conversation. Is she going to play 4 years from now? She'll be 37.
She'll play.
I have a feeling she's going to try.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know who's following her. That
Brianna Scurry.
Brianna Scurry could come back at 60 years old.
Yep.
Steve Clark in a wig.
I think that's
who it's
going
to be.
The thing that worried me going into the early part of the tournament was the system that we were playing. And when we changed that system in China, it worked so much better. And I think another key point to make, and this is to her credit, Abby Wambach being benched and being very supportive of the coach and being supportive of the players who took her spot, that, for a player of her caliber, I mean, you see a lot of players who don't deal with that kind of stuff as well, and they want minutes and they're hungry for it because the top competitors are like that. They have egos, and she realized that, okay, this is going to work better, and she put her ego aside and became basically like a cheerleader for the players who are out there. And
we're talking about the greatest women's soccer player ever.
Maybe the greatest, well, I think not only the greatest women's soccer player ever, but the greatest player on an international level of all time. I mean,
to be able to do that, just bam, just like that.
She has more international goals than Pelé, Maradona, and Messi combined. Like, I don't think people realize, like, how prolific of a goal scorer she is at international level. It is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody like that to say, I understand that I'm maybe not good enough in this system to be starting, and to just step back and say, I am behind you guys 100%, instead of throwing a fit about it, that's huge.
That is. A hell of a tournament, hell of a match. I want to shift gears for just a little bit, because the other thing that I wanted to talk about, well, first of all, friend of the program, she was going to talk, and now apparently she just ruined radio for us. Thanks, Jenny. Appreciate it.
Jenny Bell, everyone.
We'll
do it live.
Big round of applause. Article in Sports Illustrated this week, which is not on the internet yet.
Mm.
I don't know. Apparently Sports Illustrated hasn't heard of the internet or something along those lines, but
they're waiting to see.
Yeah, they're waiting to see if it works. There's an article called Pioneers, and it's basically interviews about Major League Soccer, about the formation of Major League Soccer. Jonathan Kraft is in it, Clark Hunt is in it, and Alan Rothenberg's in it. One of the other guys, U.S. Soccer Federation president from 1998, and the director of World Cup 94. A couple of people pointed this out to us on Twitter, but I wanted to just kind of get this. This is one of the quotes, and with everything that's going on in the league right now, this is one of the Rothenberg quotes from this article, talking about when they were getting everything together. We wanted to place players in the appropriate place, so Campos, I don't think we would have been smart to send him to Columbus, so we brought him to L.A.
It was 20 years ago. I mean, I've read that
here
too,
we go.
And I think too, I mean, it's
stay the course, right?
Well, it's like we had run
so
up,
much will change in 20 years.
We had run up PKs. We had the clock down, counting down from 90. I mean, there were a bunch of stuff that was weird in the early part of the league.
This was stuff that had to get back to a normal soccer level. Now we're here. Now what?
I trade run up PKs for, you know, hey,
I think,
maybe some sort of transparency and player movement.
Well, yeah. No, but Alex, go ahead. Tell us why we're the crazy ones.
I think that there is transparency. I just don't think that it's what it is.
It's easy to see through, if that's what you mean by that.
Well, I don't think that... Look, I mean, we were talking off the air about this before. I mean, and I think that there's some people who think that Andrea Pirlo would be coming to Columbus for $8 million a year if only MLS would let Precourt pay $8 million a year for Andrea Pirlo.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think that's what's happening at all. I think that you have owners in this league who are wanting to spend an obscene amount of money on their team right now.
That is what's called a straw man fallacy, by the way, Alex.
And you have other
well
owners,
played.
And you have other owners whose business model is different, and they are trying to basically break even every year. And so if you're going for a sustainable model, then you're going to have different player acquisitions than if you're going, you know, out and buying Andrea Pirlo for $16 million over 2 years.
This is the I wanted to cut.
What?
I don't follow that at all.
I don't understand.
What don't you understand?
No, I don't. Like, you think that there's separate business models for each one of these franchises?
Is that what
you're saying?
I think that Anthony Precourt, yes, Anthony Precourt invests his money differently than Toronto
Stunned.
FC.
I mean, we're this
he
is
he invests
thing.
His money in Andre Pirlo.
This is the thing that like I don't understand. It's like we're now 20 years into this
yes.
league,
yes.
And it boggles my mind that there are still people like you're a smart guy, Alex.
Yes. Yes.
There's a lot of smart people out there, and they still don't see. I mean, the league can actually go to court and fight to say that you're wrong, and it still doesn't matter. I mean, like this is what the league does.
Well,
the league has a single-minded business model. And it applies to every single team around the entire league. And the Columbus Crew are there to basically be to fill in a slot in the schedule so that these other teams to play these other teams so the league can make money. And it doesn't matter what the business model is of the Columbus Crew.
Yeah.
What it is like, are you managing the team in a way that makes sense within the city? But also, are you managing the team in a way that makes sense within the larger league? And the reason why a player like Andrea Pirlo or you know, David Beckham, anyone, Gio Dos Santos, none of those players, Mix Discarude, none of those players are ever going to be allowed to play for the Columbus Crew because they have a value that is beyond that of being a soccer player. They have a value that is there for advertising revenue, is there for television revenue, is there for marketing purposes.
It's above
Kaká
a certain threshold.
Kaká is going to play in Orlando because Kaká makes money for the league in Orlando. He would not make money playing in a place where they will never show them on television, and that's Columbus.
Yeah, it's got nothing. It's got nothing
Colorado.
To do. It's got,
it's
got absolutely nothing to do with, you know, it's not like these players aren't coming to Columbus because Precourt won't write a check. It's the league won't let him write a check.
And keep in mind
I completely disagree with that.
Keep in mind that Columbus isn't on TV because they're not allowed to have those players.
Yeah.
It's circular.
But there's also, like, the thing is, like, if the Columbus Crew are playing the Real Salt Lake, the amount of people who watch that game on ESPN is going to be minimal. There are not Major League Soccer fans who are going to be like, just like the NFL, who are going to say, I will watch the Denver Broncos play the Houston Texans. I will watch that because it's the NFL. That doesn't happen in MLS. That's what MLS wants. It's not happening. It's probably not going to happen for the foreseeable future, no matter what they try. But if it's Columbus and if it's Real Salt Lake, it's definitely not going to happen. The only way that that happens is if you have teams that are good in New York, L.A., Toronto, which has a lot of eyes, Chicago, which we'll see what happens here. I don't know if they're going to. I mean, basically, the league is Houtman is just destroying that team in that market, and they barely exist. I mean, Seattle is another one. They watch these games, and people tune in for that. They do not tune in to watch the Columbus Crew.
But they're in this cycle now where they say nobody's watching the Crew, so we can't let somebody that's decent go to that team.
And then they don't put them on TV because there's nobody decent on that team.
You know,
and so goes the circle.
I mean, those 3 years where the Crew won, Real Salt Lake won, and Colorado won, they had to be just the worst possible moment for the people in New York, for Don Garber. Because here they had brought in all these designated players. They brought in Beckham. They figured out ways to make these teams super, super television friendly, and they weren't winning. You saw what happened after that.
I mean, they
figured out a way to get LA wins, and that was make sure that they can change the rules so that they can sign more players.
And they're doing it again with
the
core players.
Well, that's what I want to get on, Alex. Quick counterpoint before we go into the core player thing, because something just came out on this very very recently.
Well, what Greg said I think sums up my opinion on it. I completely disagree with the idea that Anthony Precourt is sitting there ready to write multi-million dollar checks for players, and the league is saying, no, you're not allowed to write multi-million dollar checks for players. I simply disagree with that. Whether it would be Andrea Pirlo or not, I don't know. But the idea that Precourt cannot find a player anywhere in the world who will play for the Crew for $3 million because the league will refuse to let anybody play here for $3 million, I think that's completely false.
Sorry.
Mix is the perfect example of why this is a thing.
It's also one example, and there haven't been any other examples, and we've had multiple interviews from Anthony Precourt saying, I'm not looking to build a team like Toronto. I'm not looking to build a team like New York City. The teams that he looks at, and he's been looking at since before he bought this team, were Kansas City and Portland.
And how many designated players do those teams have?
Two, right? Kansas has two, right?
Well,
Portland has two.
Mm-hmm. How many do we have?
We have one in Kai Kamara, who's paid down with allocation money, and he's going to be a DP next season. So we're going to have two as well.
What do you got, Justin?
There's also a difference though between those two teams and the Columbus Crew. Kansas City was basically a rebrand, totally a rebrand. So they're basically an expansion team.
Yep.
And they also threw in players who, well, Kai Kamara used to play for them, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they also threw in players who were national team quality players and made sure that. Graham Zuzi and Matt Beisler stayed there.
And Colin.
Honest to God, as much as MLS fought it, as much as the league fought it, as much as, the commissioner fought it, and all of the people who are supposedly in the know and in the media fought it, Graham Zuzi and Matt Beisler should have left MLS and gone to Europe to play, to learn how to play. they have fallen off dramatically. I mean, I actually saw somebody say that Matt Beisler is having his best year as a defender. I cannot believe that. I watched that guy, and he looks like he is completely lost at times. Graham Zuzzi is no longer going to factor into the United States men's national team, and they're going to blame Jurgen Klinsmann for that, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just not as good as they should be. But they were marketable, and so they kept them there, and they needed to basically have Kansas City be good. So that's why they basically made
why
it.
Why
did so
they have to have Kansas City be good? Why wouldn't they have New York
because
be
it
good?
Because it was a rebrand. Because it was like the new team.
Then why aren't we getting players?
We're not really a rebrand, and also we're Columbus. I mean, look, I don't know what else to say. I mean, like it's. The evidence is there from like the beginning of the league to now. We are in a position where we have to make our own team. We have to make our own players. We basically have to treat this like a club seriously. I mean, because if we don't, there's no way we can compete. And the only reason why we do get a chance to compete against teams right now is because once you get past 4, 5, 6, 8 on some of these teams, we match up with those players. The league is now actively trying to make it so that we can't do that anymore. They want to have those like players 7, 8, 9, 10 on the LA Galaxy be not just good, but great. And they're going to do that. They're going to do that in Orlando. They're going to do that in New York. One of the things I was listening to Soccer by Ives last night talking about how good New York City FC is going to be by the end of the season, and that they could be in playoff contention. And I completely agree with him.
Well, they're going to have four people on their roster that make more than our entire roster combined.
It's critically important to the league that team make the playoffs.
Not just those four people, four individuals.
I think one thing that's a problem, though, if you take this idea seriously, then Preport's been lying to all of us when he says that, oh, I want to build a team that's fine, that's like fiscally responsible.
No.
I want to build a team that's...
No. He's not lying.
He's not lying at all. He means it.
I think what he's saying is that that's the way we have to compete. I think we have to compete by creating players here in Columbus, Ohio that can play for the Columbus Crew.
I would love to hear his opinion.
Because he knows he's not going to do it any other way. That's what it is.
I want to know who's going to be the first chief operating investor, whatever the hell they're called, to go nuts, whether it's Mayor Paulson or an older, more senile Tony Aces, and just starts spilling the beans and going, this has been bullshit the whole time. They won't let us even. I can't do shit.
Bruce Arena said it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, that's the funny thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't work out for him. Yeah, a guy who completely is the beneficiary of all of this system.
Yeah.
He sees it. He knows what's going on because they tried to get Sasha Kljestan, and the league would not allow them to get Sasha Kljestan. And he comes out and says, this is crap. And he gets fined for it. He gets smacked down. So they're going to do that to Bruce Arena. What do you think they're going to do to Anthony Precourt if he says it? What do you think they're going to do to Greg Berhalter if he says it? I mean, this is the business that we're in. This is the business that we've chosen.
I still think we could sign a player for $4 million if they wanted to sign a player for $4 million tomorrow. They could
Player was not wanted by any other team.
If we're competing with the Colorado Rapids for the player, then we might get him.
Yeah, if nobody above Columbus on this predetermined pecking order.
Yeah.
Wants this player, which is pretty much everyone.
Then why don't we do that?
Because we can't. Like, look, it,
no, we can.
Who? Yeah, that's the thing. Who?
Well, we're talking about
who would you, here.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I want to continue on because I got one more thing to talk about before we hit this break. The new core player rule. Information slowly coming out on this. At 6 o'clock this evening, a new article was posted on the Massive Report website by Mr. Patrick Gildon. Talking about this. So the core player rule essentially lets people, lets teams with designated player contracts that are under $750,000 to pay them down using witchcraft? Garbage bucks. I'm not 100%
literal
sure.
Garbage bucks only.
But, so the thought was is that, well, maybe Federico Higuain, his salary last year was $744,000 in guaranteed compensation.
Maybe we could pay him down to be a core player.
Yeah.
Nope.
No, we can't, because you can only use the core player rule if you've used all three of your DP slots.
But why?
That is the new. Yeah. That is the new thing that's coming out via Yahoo Sports. the only constraint is, I'm paraphrasing from Patrick's article here, your salary budget does not expand with the addition of the rules, so you're going to have to fit another player on the books. The budget this year, though, $3.49 million.
Or you could not and just pay it down with pretend money that doesn't exist and literally isn't a thing.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why...
Are you kidding me?
I don't understand what's bad about having a... Like, what's the difference between a core player, having one core player and one designated player? Like, I understand why it's only if you have three
DPs. I understand why, because you can't pay down the salary for somebody unless you're already one of the super rich teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
That this is set up to protect Orlando, New York,
it's
LA.
It's a fourth DP slot.
It's a fourth DP slot.
That's exactly what
that
it
can
is.
Only be used and can only be used at the lower constraint, the lower monetary constraint, by the teams that have the money.
Yeah, but if you have two DPs and you want to add a third DP, there's a slot for that. So of course it would only affect if you have three and you go into four.
But you're talking about paying down their salaries.
Alex, remember Garber bucks are the most important thing here, because it's not real. It's not a real thing.
I think they should just add a fourth DP, and I think it'd be good for the league if they added a fourth. And honestly, I think it'd be good if they added a fifth before too long.
But see, they can't.
Fuck the DPs. Why do we need?
No, that's
these?
A really good point, though.
Yeah,
that's a really good point. The reason why they can't is because they just negotiated a big deal, and in a lot of our opinions, the players capitulated a little early. I believe
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that they did was negotiate that.
Yes.
And so. Mm-hmm. If they start doing that, and I agree, I think they should allow these teams to go ahead and say, let's scrap all the... In fact, let's scrap the designated player
32 designated player spots.
Exactly.
On each team.
And open it up and say that each one of these teams can be... Spend as much as they want,
mm-hmm.
do whatever they want, build their team, but we can't.
And because the reason, it's one business.
Because it's one business.
Yep.
There you go.
You don't want to allocate a bunch of funds of your business to the stupid warehouse or the stupid marketing department or purchasing when sales are paying the bills.
And if they
the sales department is the sexiest department, Justin.
It's one of those things we talked about. It's like, if they admit that it's not a single entity, then they have to give free agency.
Yep.
So yeah. this is basically where this league is just caught. And it goes back to the article in Sports Illustrated, where they're talking about what they were worried about when they started. And Phil Anschutz came in and mm-hmm. and had a lot of... He wasn't going to get involved. And he ended up, by the end of the conversation...
Owning half the teams.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that was what those guys were getting into the business for. They didn't want to lose their shirts. They didn't want to get put into a spot where they needed to pay players. They were actually saying that they would only... Like, players are talking about like how they... They were going to Taco Bell, right? But like, then there are some players who they just give a Ferrari to here and there,
mm-hmm.
just to keep them happy.
Question.
I mean, it's
how many generations of Americans are going to have to suffer because the New York Cosmos spent too much money in 1984? Now, of course, the answer is
all of
zero
the generations.
And all of them, because that's not the real reason. That's just what they say. Oh, look what happened the last time. Well, businesses go out of business every goddamn day.
Unless you're Chase Bank.
Well, MLS is one giant bailout, Matt.
I mean, look, it makes sense if you're a business guy. It makes absolute sense.
I'll take six teams right now.
Yeah.
You tell me I can't lose money? What?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you can build your, you know, like one of the things, and I like Anthony Precourt. I think he's a nice guy.
Me too.
But like, there's a reason why he chose this sport to create his sports venture, you know, PSV. And it's because the risk is very low.
It's fail safe.
It's very low.
Yeah.
You can fail. It's not totally fail safe.
Look at Chivas.
But it's really freaking hard.
It takes one rock in the range to make it all worth it, baby.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, true story. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back in a little bit. Greg's going to talk. Friend of the program, Travis Irvine, is going to be on in a little bit.
I demand that he takes my mic.
To probably blather incoherently. That's usually what he does. So Travis will be on in just a second. We're coming back. A lot more to come. This is the Massive Report.
Well, that was a fun weekend, wasn't it? Welcome back to From the Ether, rather, and into episode 46 of Cards Against Insanity, sponsored this week by the 300 million Americans who all become annual shark experts for 7 days. But for those of us whose experience in marine biology can be summed up by, huh, so that's what happens when you drag fish backwards, let's replace Shark Week with Snark Week. Thanks for the line, Tony. The check's in the mail. Opinions are mine and do not necessarily reflect those of the Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC. One thing that I'll mention before I begin is that I am not giving tonight's red card to the 1,000,001 idiots on Twitter who caused Pearl Harbor and atomic bomb to be trending topics during last night's World Cup final. Mostly because doing so would validate your half-assed attempt at comedy while everyone else was swinging at the same low-hanging fruit. It might be too much to ask you to show a little class, but in the name of all that's actually funny, just put the phone down and watch the game next time. Moving on, because I'm keeping the mood light, yellow card to the Federated States of Micronesia, who over the weekend gave up 68 goals in 2 matches, making them 19 times worse than Queen's Park Rangers. Playing in the Pacific Games in Papua New Guinea, Micronesia were beaten 30-0 by Tahiti on Friday, and then 38-0 by Fiji on Sunday. In that game, Fiji led 21-0 at halftime, and Micronesia said screw it and replaced the goalie with an outfield player, and amazingly only conceded 17 in the second half. Now, FIFA's probably not going to recognize this as an official record for a few reasons. First, it's essentially a junior tournament with all countries bringing their under-23 squads. Also, Micronesia isn't a member of FIFA, and plus the old guys at FIFA have very poor eyesight and can't see anything smaller than a regular Nesia. Yellow card to a couple of Andy Murray fans at Wimbledon. A group of pink-shirted lads were spotted during Murray's third-round win over Andreas Seppi, standing in a row spelling out Murray's name, you know, with each person having one letter on their chest, complete with hashtag and exclamation point. But the group only managed to spell out hashtag M-U-R-Y exclamation point. That's not how he spells his name. Why? Not because they're bad at spelling, but because the guys in the A and the other R didn't show up. This is why you get written agreements. It would have been funnier if just the guy in the A had also turned up and they'd spelled out Maury. So maybe they could do a DNA test and find out how Murray is British when he wins, then magically morphs into being Scottish when he loses. Yellow card to West Bromwich Albion. They finished 13th in the Premier League last season, which isn't awful, but you'd swear that their season was completely lacking any highlights, judging by the promotional video they rolled out to launch their new home kit. Now, normally for one of these things, the team will put together a montage containing a few of their best goals of the season, some cheering fans, and a shot of the guys posing in the new jersey. But that's been done. West Brom instead used the entire minute to show that one time last year when a referee sent off one of their players when he totally should have sent off the other guy. That's it. Fade in, guy gets a red card, guy next to him is like, wait a second, I was the one who tackled him. Cut to shot of New Jersey, fade to black, rush it into production. It's perfect. No word on whether the Sounders will be doing something similar for their new kit launch next year. Maybe they'll just have the players walk out in a shower of confetti made up of referees' pocketbooks. Yellow card to NASCAR. If you missed it, which you probably did, they ran the annual 4th of July weekend Coke Zero 400 at Daytona on Sunday night, and that's bizarre in itself. Normally the race takes place on the Saturday night, especially when that night happens to be, you know, the 4th of July, the thing you're celebrating. But in a bizarre move, NASCAR moved the race to Sunday night, the night before everyone who traveled from out of town had to go back to work, and Mother Nature responded by making it rain. A lot. So what did NASCAR do once the storms had passed and the track was dry? Wait to run the race on Monday like they usually do? Nope, they went green at 11:42 p.m., over 3.5 hours past the scheduled start time. Hope you brought a sleeping bag. It meant the race didn't finish until 2:45 in the morning, and of course then they had an enormous wreck as the field crossed the finishing line, resulting in yet another car taking out another section of the catch fence. So it is kind of like a slumber party, only with debris coming in your window, which, as I recall, was a lot like living in North Linden. Yellow card to Mario Götze, the Bayern Munich star and last person not named Carly Lloyd to score a World Cup winning goal, has been spending some downtime in L.A. over the offseason, was invited by the Dodgers to throw out the first pitch at Friday night's game against the Mets. Götze's throw was a little high, to say the least. Catcher A.J. Ellis gave Dodger fans a brief scare when he pulled up clutching his back after making a flying leap just to catch the ball. Turns out he was just play-acting, making Götze wonder if he'd accidentally turned up to an Italy game. But a ceremonial first pitches by non-baseball... There's that look that I keep talking about from Alex. But a ceremonial first pitches by non-baseball players go, the throw wasn't that bad. In fact, Götze has just been offered a 3-year contract by the Reds. So you thought I was going to say Indians, didn't you?
I got to give Cleveland a break every now and then. They are losing right now, after all. And finally, red card to the English FA, who apparently lived up to their name by giving absolutely FA about the women's game in their country. Earlier today, in the wake of Saturday's win over Germany to claim third place at the Women's World Cup, the @England account tweeted, quote, "Our Lionesses go back to being mothers, daughters, and partners today, but they have taken on another title, heroes," end quote. Someone actually typed that out, looked at it, said, "Seems all right to me, chaps," and clicked post. Okay. On one hand, I don't like reading too much into things. I don't like the culture of being offended. I think you can be too liberal. But after everything else the women of the World Cup have been through in the lead-up to and during the tournament, it's hard not to read this as patronizing and sexist. It's hard to imagine the FA tweeting that their male players just went back to being husbands, fathers, and sons, even if it might be true. And given how early England's men usually make their exit from World Cups, you would think that would be a golden opportunity to point out what good dads they are. But no, 48 hours after beating Germany, something the men haven't done since 1966, and that was only half of Germany anyway, the Lionesses have been reduced to a gender stereotype. And while a well-intentioned but poorly executed tweet is not the be-all and end-all, it does highlight a bigger problem with how we perceive female athletes that still exists whether we like it or not. Last night's World Cup final drew a 15.2 overnight TV rating in the U.S. That's over 25 million people. More than the population of Australia watched that game in the U.S. It was not only far and away the most watched soccer game in American TV history, but it eclipsed this year's Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals by a lot. And how did FIFA reward the World Cup winners? The U.S. team received a $2 million payday. Compare that to the $9 million that the men made for reaching the round of 16 last year. Add that to the turf fields, Sepp Blatter's comments about playing in shorter shorts, the social media response to women players being included in FIFA 16. Something is still very wrong here. 16 years ago, players like Mia Hamm and Brandi Chastain inspired a generation of young girls to take up soccer in the hope they'd achieve the same dream of winning a World Cup for their country. And last night, 23 of them realized that dream and have no doubt inspired another generation of girls to want to do the same, to be the next Carly Lloyd or Abby Wambach or Hope. Okay, maybe we don't need another Hope Solo, but you know what I mean. The TV ratings say that we care. The outpouring of support on Facebook and Twitter says that we care. But if at the back of our minds we've always adopted this English FA-style attitude, where women get to play sports and entertain us for a while, but really they're still just baby-making machines, we really don't care as much as we say we do. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614, and if you're at Hendock's Pub, you're in my seat. Reminder once again to use the hashtag MRCards if you've got something I should be including on next week's show. Until then, play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
And we are back. It is the Massive Report with our good buddy Travis Irvine. What's going on, Travis?
Hey, long-time caller, first-time listener.
I'm going to do this. We don't do this very often, but and I've got a reason for it. Justin, go ahead and roll the tape.
It's totally a tape.
Is that the tape?
It is.
Welcome back to a special Independence Day edition of Climate Change Denier News. I'm Seymour Smog. New studies from denier scientists show that when coal mining increases, more bald eagles are seen in the wild. It's unclear if the two are related, but for now, it looks like more mining means more of our feathered friends flying around. How are your elected officials fighting the climate change conspiracy? Well, one senator is taking a stand. Literally. Senator Dean Nyer is currently in the 17th hour of a historic filibuster against a controversial carbon reduction bill. And he's using science as his main weapon.
Mr. President, people keep saying this is the hottest year on record. Well, if that's the case, Mr. President, how do you explain this? You know what this is, Mr. President? It is an ice cube. It's still frozen. Here, catch this. This is frozen corn, Mr. President. And look, it is still frozen. Here, catch that. We got peas, frozen peas. They are still frozen, Mr. President. Here, catch that. You know what this is? This is a frozen pizza, everybody. Look. It can't bite it. Why? Because it's still frozen. Here, catch this.
Coming up, do polar bears hate America? Should we kill them all? One study says yes. More climate change denier news coming up.
So first of all, welcome back to the show, Travis.
Thanks so much for having me.
I enjoyed that bit. Where can people watch your stuff, first of all?
This is my new job at theguardian.com. I'm making funny climate change videos because climate change is so depressing. either got to deny it, ignore it, or be really depressed by it.
That's the website run by Stevie Guardian over in Bexley, uh-huh. right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Steve Guardian.
Steve Guardian. Stevie G.
The real Guardian.
Yeah, no, the real one, the Edward Snowden story-breaking Guardian.
You got like a big kid job.
I know, right?
Dude, congrats.
What the hell? I still don't brush my hair though.
Yeah, I noticed.
Just like to point that out.
I do want to point out one more thing or plug one more thing for you before we go in and actually talk about the crew. I'm going to Montreal this weekend. Mm. You're going to Montreal
this
weekend.
I'm going to Montreal, yeah.
Alex is apparently going to Montreal this weekend. Except for Alex won't get to eat any poutine because apparently he doesn't animals.
They have vegetarian poutine.
Ryan?
Okay.
Prostitution's legal, so you can eat as much poutine as you want.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, then we're getting Alex a hooker this weekend. But plug you're doing comedy shows in Montreal the weekend of the Crew Away game, so plug those real quick.
Absolutely.
Because I'm going to one.
When Ryan Gear and I went to Montreal back in 2013, I did a guest set over at the Comedy Nest, which is a fantastic comedy club there. And so I wrote them back, and they booked me for not one but two shows, 8 o'clock, 10:30 this Friday, with Paul Morrissey from Letterman. He's hilarious, so I'm really excited about it. I just hope my train gets in on time so I can do the first show. The first 8 o'clock show.
Fingers crossed.
I really gotta learn how to like take a plane at some point. You think I would just take a plane, but I'm not going to.
It's way cheaper, isn't it?
It's way cheaper to just sit on a bus with Chinese people for 9 hours or sit on a train for 12 hours.
Yeah, that's fair.
So
you're taking the Chinatown Express back
at midnight tonight. Back to New York City. I gotta put more FaceTime in at the Guardian so they don't they don't fire me.
That's fair. Yeah. All right, so I want to talk about this. Cedric signs with the crew. Mm. Obviously Cedric in town with the crew. Apparently wearing just a awful Philadelphia Phillies hat, from what Morgan said. What do you think about that, Justin?
I didn't see the hat. I thought it was a Punisher hat. That's what I thought.
It was.
Was it
a Punisher hat?
It was a Punisher
hat. So Morgan's like just stupid.
Yeah, Morgan's an idiot.
Well, going.
I haven't seen the photo.
Well, going to Phillies games is punishment enough.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sick burn.
So if we have any Phillies fans who actually listen, that's going to hurt them.
Ah, Phillies fans.
I know, right?
I didn't even know Philly had a baseball team still. Sure, we got uniforms and everything. And then other Morgan just walks by with her dog.
That was Girl Morgan walked by with her dog.
It was Girl Morgan, yes.
Well, Morgan is a girl's name.
Yeah.
By the way, I would like to take credit for the Sasha is a girl's name chant that started at the New York Red Bulls game. And by meaning I would like to, I didn't. But the guy in front of me started saying that, and I jumped right on it. So
I thought that was great.
It was great. It was fantastic. Chant, and everyone, Morgan Hughes, was a great sport about it.
It was very good. I always like whenever that chant goes up, like whenever it's such and such, like when Morgan is a girl's name, when that starts, it's usually somebody like Tony who starts it, and then that becomes Tony is a girl's name. If Alex joined in, it would be Alex is a girl's name.
That always a thing? Because I thought Matt and I, we did an Akron at the game last year.
Yeah.
I thought that was the first time anybody thought of it.
I don't know if it was the first time, but it was.
He's been hearing that since middle school.
Yeah, it was early. It was early into the genesis of Morgan is a girl's name. So, Cedric, I want to get back to this real quick, though, because two questions I'm going to the panel. A, when do we see him play first? B, does he make an impact immediately? Does he need to acclimate? We'll start with Justin.
I'd like to see him play as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Do we see him this weekend?
Maybe. Off the bench.
Off the bench.
I think Alex is right.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to see is I would like to see them move to that 3-5-2 that they've been practicing with. With him involved. There you go.
All right, Alex.
Yeah, if they play him wide left in a 3-5-2, that would be really good.
Move Merrim up, maybe.
Yeah. I think he's got a lot of potential. I mean, I think I've seen him play maybe once or twice at a club level. I've only seen him play once international, and then I've seen a bunch of YouTube highlights, and he looks good. I mean, he's incredibly fast.
Yeah.
But he's good with the ball. with his speed. So, I mean, if you can imagine Oduro, if Oduro could finish and Oduro was better at dribbling, I mean, that's basically what
you
get with Cedric.
He's Oduro 2.0, basically.
He's got that pace that Oduro had, that, like, really, really sudden pace. Mm-hmm. But he's a really good dribbler. There's a highlight video of him against Real Madrid from 2 years ago on YouTube. If you look that up, I mean, he's going against one of the best defenses in the world and causing them all kinds of problems. So, I mean, no offense to Montreal, but they're not
one of the
Real
best.
Madrid. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
they're not one of the best anythings in the world.
He could really help us.
And if you can imagine having him on the left, Finley on the right, in that, you know, with Merrim up front. You know, one of the things, I'm looking over because Mark Spurgeon's here. I was at the game with him on Saturday, and one of the things he brought up about Merrim, which I thought was very smart, was that Merrim has this kind of ability, I think it's almost a natural ability, to kind of change pace really quickly. Like, almost without making it look like he's moving, you know, that he can move quickly with the ball. And we saw it a couple times in the game. If you can combine that with Cedric, kind of like overlapping him a little bit on the left, I think we've got there's a chance for a really potent attack on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And with the way that Kamara and Finley work together on the right, and then have Higuain right in the middle of that working that, oh my gosh. I mean, there's a lot of potential there for good soccer.
It's huge potential. Travis.
Yeah, August. I say August. That's when he's starting at every single position on the team.
Total Cedric.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just Columbus Cedric SC at that point.
Yeah.
It's just, we even dropped Columbus out. It's just Cedric SC.
I like this.
Mabwati is ready.
Oh,
anyway.
Greg.
What was the thing? If you want my Mabwati.
If you want my Mabwati.
If you want my Mabwati.
Was that Nate Beckman?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was what. Apologies to Nate Beckman. It was more of an homage than anything else. But. But no, and also I think he's going to need some time to, I wouldn't say acclimate, but kind of, you know, train with the team, get minutes in with, you know, learning the guys he's going to be playing around. You know, we'd love it to be like a FIFA thing where you can just take somebody off the, you know, the waiver wire and just slot him right into the team and he's just lighting up and scoring 10 goals a game.
That's not how it works.
Wait,
that's not how it works. No. I'm afraid not.
Oh, my God.
Man, and his FIFA rating's so high.
I spent 100 hours on Football Manager for nothing? Oh, my gosh.
No, I like what I've seen of him, and I think that, you know, I've felt much of this season watching Justin Merrim. We were talking about moving him up to a forward position. You feel like he wants to get forward and score goals. He wants to be that guy up there that's, you know, that's the last person to touch it before it goes in. He gets service from a guy like Cedric, and I think that's a possibility. I think it can benefit not just Cedric as a player can benefit, but what Merrim gets out of that too. I think he becomes a better player and a better finisher.
That's fair.
And we've seen what happens with Kamara and Finley and the way that they work together. All of a sudden, you've got another threat now coming from the other side,
mm-hmm.
and you know, maybe you see. Cedric and Merrim hook up the way that Finley and Kamara have.
Mm.
Why not?
I think it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if he does come on as a sub this weekend in Montreal.
I don't think it happens this weekend.
You don't?
I don't think so.
Maybe the home game, the next home game.
I would
comes
in
as a sub. That's when you want to welcome the guy.
Yeah,
25th is the next home game, I think.
Really?
Is that the next home game, or is it?
It's because we've got...
Play Chicago in 2 weeks.
Chicago in 2 weeks, yeah.
Isn't that an away game?
No, the away game is that Wednesday.
And then they're home?
And then they're home.
Yeah, they play
They play Colorado as well.
Ooh.
In between them.
Okay. Toronto. It's Montreal Saturday. Chicago, at Chicago the following Wednesday.
Okay.
And then home that week from Montreal.
Okay.
So it's, yeah.
Okay.
And then it's Toronto right after that.
Oh, okay. I must have been looking at the wrong thing then. So, interesting stuff as far as that goes. Mid-season, pretty much right on the nose. And we already kind of discussed this earlier, but I wanted to get your opinion on this, Travis. The team right now, second place in the East.
Hell yeah.
However, Second through sixth place.
That's my expert
analysis.
We're hot
like climate change.
That was the expert analysis you were hoping for, right?
Hot take. Travis has got a hot take
here.
Bark. 24 points. The sixth place of New York Red Bulls have 23 points.
Yeah, this thing is just like, what?
Can you do a Don Garber parody video at some point?
Please.
Oh, I met the guy.
Your K-Sox video. Can you do one but for Don Garber?
I don't know. What's a funnier name for Don Garber?
Don Goober.
The song. I don't know. I'm just happy that our record is 666 right now.
Sign of the Beast. The number of SC.
Yeah, they are. Right? They are in beast mode.
Six. We are in beast mode.
There you
100%.
Go. See, I said it was a hell of a season before, and they asked me how am I going to top that beast mode. That's
beast
how
mode.
It happened.
Nice.
That
nice.
Didn't top it. That yes. didn't top it.
It didn't.
No. He seemed to think so. He's the actual comedian here.
I'm always impressed with Greg's comedic abilities at all times.
You don't have to kiss his
He's
ass.
Very awesome.
You really don't. You're not getting paid for this.
I am getting free booze, right?
No.
Oh, that's right. I got a tab open. Hey, Greg. You know, I'm sorry about the Australian women.
You know, they went a lot further than I thought they would.
They always do.
Ah.
Greg will be opening for me at the Comedy Nest in Montreal, Canada.
I wait. If you can sneak me across the border in a trunk, that'd be fantastic.
We will try, and we will get in trouble.
You will definitely get in trouble.
Greg will be opening for you at Canadian Federal Prison.
Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Special performance by Greg Bison.
It's just the Canada prison. It's like South Park. It's like, welcome to Canada Airport. We're taking you to Canada Prison.
All right, guys, let's take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk Crew Montreal. And apparently my girlfriend's going to laugh so loud from the other room that everybody hears it. This is the Massive Report.
Arrivé!
time left. Hey, Columbus! Le match est fini. Columbus 2, Mathieu 1. La victory, viva Columbus! Au revoir, mes amigos. I don't know how to speak French.
I absolutely love that song, by the way, Travis.
Thank you. It was not copyrighted, so I could use it on YouTube.
Don't get a copyright strike for that one.
Welcome back. Yeah. It is segment number four of the Massive Report. It's brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. And thanks again to Cake for Leroy for bringing us cookies a while ago.
Keep up the good work.
So yes, good. Seriously, they you can so bring good. Us cookies whenever. Also, just so you know, if you are interested in sponsoring the show, we'll make Morgan say whatever we want him to say to promote your business. Or you can just give us money and we'll make Morgan say something really stupid. Both of those things, it's in his contract. He has to do it. Isn't there, Justin, you drew his contract up.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, yeah. So if you want Morgan to say stupid, embarrassing things, pay us money.
I just want to say that the credits on that episode of Road Crew that we just played are so excellent. It's directed and edited by Travis Irvine. Mm. Produced and shot by Ryan Gere. He's in the building. Production assistants Jean-Luc Godard, Francois Tufraud, and a bunch of French people. Yeah.
They needed translators, right?
And I was never allowed into Montreal again.
Until this week.
It's a great city.
It's beautiful. I can't wait.
It's going to be Road Crew 4, Episode 2.
You're doing a road crew this French weekend, whether you like it or not.
If you guys want to.
Although, I'm not allowed to stand too close to you at any away matches from now on.
Why not?
Because the last one we got thrown out.
Oh, that's right.
he can just go up to security now and just be like, je suis un comédien.
Yeah, yeah.
And then be like,
I will say, in terms, I mean,
come on through, whatever.
The Montreal
I should have rehearsed that a little better.
Everyone who works at the stadium, the fans, everyone in Montreal is just better. It's just, you know, we're used to, like, Philly coming up to us and trying to start a fight, and Chicago doing whatever. Montreal, everyone's super polite, super Canadian, super French.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great people.
Say fantastique.
Fantastique.
Matthew.
Thank you.
Matthew.
How about those bagels, guys?
Toy Bien.
Aren't you all
bagels? Everyone keeps talking about the bagels. I don't know what... The bagels are not that good there.
Oh, my... You're wrong.
Come to New York City and you get a good bagel.
I've had New York bagels. They're inferior.
Oh, all right, boy. So I want to talk about this match a little bit. Any real changes from the lineup we saw against New York, against Montreal? Greg?
I can't see it. Right now, I think that they're on a... It's funny to say this after the last month that we'd gone through before the last two wins. Mm. They're on a good thing now. They've got a winning formula going on. They've just knocked off, you know, two teams that were ahead of them before.
Yeah.
So I think you stick with the formula that works right now. I don't think you shake it up.
Hmm. Travis?
I'd just like to point out that the only home games I've been to this year are the home opener against Philadelphia, the May win against Seattle, New England, and New York. So every time I'm home for a game, they win. This is my first away game. I think I'm going to bring the magic.
Magic
with
Travis.
Me.
You better.
Hashtag Magic
because
Travis.
Montreal beat us here when I wasn't there.
I'm looking at
so
you,
So that's
Alex,
why I'm going to Montreal.
You better. We're drowning you in the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Oh, good.
Alex.
No, I think we're going to keep
the
pretty
Saint
much.
Lawrence Seaway there? Hmm? Is it the St. Lawrence Seaway there?
Rivers. St. Lawrence River or Seaway?
There's, yeah.
My Canadian geography.
No, no, go ahead, Alex. Somewhere.
I think we'll probably see the same lineup, although I think there's a chance that Trapp will start. We'll see how his fitness is. If he's off the bench again, that's fine. You know, they should absolutely not rush him back. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
But if he's fit for 90, then I think he'll play. I think we'll potentially see Cedric off the bench. I don't know. I mean, depending on what his fitness levels are, I think they really want to get him involved as soon as possible. But Berhalter did say earlier today that they're kind of going to take it slow with him, mm-hmm. integrating him in the team. So it's possible he will not make the 18. We'll have to see. But either way, I think we're in good shape.
All right, Justin.
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
100%.
100%? By the way, it's apparently Le Fleuve de Saint-Laurent. I don't know what that means.
No,
it's the Fleuve.
What the hell is a flu?
Saint Laurent has
so
the flu.
So you're gonna drown me in the flu.
I'm gonna drown you in the flu. Or,
oh, I thought you meant he has the flu.
Or Lac Saint Louis.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another option that I have to drown you.
Ooh la la.
Later if we lose.
As long as you put me down there with a nice big crepe.
You have your choice
or a delicious glass of Land Grant beer.
Cha-ching.
Unbelievable.
Oh, totally. All right. I'm going to put this thing to bed unless you guys have anything else. You guys have anything else?
You can't actually put a podcast to bed.
You can, actually.
He's about to do it.
I just say that just to get the reaction from Justin. Just the expression. It's worth the price of admission.
All right, Greg, score prediction.
3-1 crew.
Travis.
2-1 crew.
So it is in Canada. You have to say it in French as well. Oh, so 3-1. A la crew.
2-1. 2-0.
You know I love when people say that,
right?
When it's not in the context of USA being Mexico. Have I told anybody about that before?
Alex.
5-2.
5-2.
I'm still in Women's World Cup mode.
Okay.
I'm still in Women's World Cup mode. Abby Wambach's going to come off the bench.
Ooh.
It's going to be great.
They would never let Columbus have Abby Wambach.
I think she could score goals in MLS.
Here we go again.
Yeah, we're going to do this again. If only Garb would get out of the way, we would sign Alex Morgan. Girl. Yeah.
All right, Justin.
I think it's going to be a draw.
Oh. Yeah.
What score?
Same goals, two same goals. Pick a number, Justin. Come on.
Justin Bell. Justin Bell, please.
Goals to goals.
I go to win 3-1. Why not? Screw it. Mm-hmm. This has been a podcast.
Just take my prediction, why don't you?
This has been a podcast. We do it. It's here. It's a thing that happens. It's brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. It's live at Hendox every single Monday. We're going to be flying back on Monday to do another podcast. Are you going to be on the show next week?
I got Monday Night Live at Wild Goose Creative, 9 p.m., so we will be competing. But, you know, come to that thing and then listen to this thing the next day.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I'm good with that. Monday Night Live, Travis will be there next Monday. Travis doing stand-up in Montreal this weekend, so if you're going, you better go to the late show with all of us.
I got two comps for each show, 8 o'clock at 10:30.
They're already spoken for.
Okay, great.
He had
two comps for each show.
He had two comps for each show. The Comedy Nest from Montreal, Canada.
Gold Cup starts this week, by the way.
Oh.
It starts tomorrow. We don't have to talk about it. That's fine.
No, the U.S. has a men's team?
Yes. We do. And it's going to be awesome. Starts tomorrow. Watch that.
Yeah.
We'll probably talk about it in depth on the next episode of
The Massive Reports. For everyone on the show, for Justin Bell, Morgan Hughes, who left because apparently he wants to go play softball in the middle of the night, Alex Static, Travis Irvine, who joined us, Greg Benson, my name is Matt Goshard. This has been another edition. Some places you've been before are so great that you don't ever mind going back. Some places you've been before, you don't ever want to go back. You know, like Montreal in the winter.